Factis Radio, FM 104.6, bringing the island's community together.
Got a special guest in the studio, and I'm really, really pleased that you've come in, because I've just spent half an hour out there hearing you read some stories that we're going to talk about in a minute. But welcome, Ian Charles Dickens.
Thank you very much. Lovely to be here.
Oh, it's great that you could come in and spare some time. And I know you're busy, and I suppose you're busier now at this time of year than any other time.
Well, A Christmas Carol, it always has such a resonance at this time of year, and remains as popular now as when it was first published. But it's been a busy year for me. I live in Gurnard, and a few years ago, we realised that 2024 marked the 175th anniversary of the Dickens family spending 3 months on the Isle of Wight across the summer of 1849. And we thought, well, that's an opportunity to make some noise. So it's been a busy year with lots of activities to highlight that fact.
Fantastic.
It's been great fun doing.
So where are you in there? You know, Charles Dickens, and you're how many down?
I'm a great-great-grandson.
Great.
Charles and his wife Catherine, they had 10 children, which, you know, sounds a lot now, but it's fairly normal in Victorian times. But only two of those children, the eldest boy Charlie and the eighth child Henry, had children that continue to today. So my great grandfather is Henry, and the surname of Dickens continues down through that line.
Wow. I mean, this is incredible. So have you always lived on the island, or you've moved
No,
recently?
No, moved here in 2018.
Okay.
And feel like we've lived here all our lives. It's,
and there obviously is a link to the island.
Yes, yeah, so Charles and his wife, Catherine, first came here in 1838. The year before, his wife's sister, aged 17, had tragically, suddenly died. They'd all been to the theatre that night and had come home in great spirits. And suddenly a noise from her bedroom, and she collapsed and she died in his arms. And it absolutely knocked them both for six. And I think a year later, they had heard about the quality of air on the Isle of Wight. The Queen's new physician, Sir James Clark, had said that the air, particularly on the south of the island, is good for one's health. Charles Dickens suffered from asthma as a child, which is something I also suffer from. And I think they were probably coming here to overcome that. So they came in September of that year, and they spent three, four days at Allen Bay, at the Needle Grove Hotel, and then they went over to Ventnor and stayed in the Ventnor Hotel, which is now the Royal Hotel. And at that time, 1838, his career was just about to explode. He was this unknown writer. He'd written a series of short stories called Sketches by Boz, which was bringing him a great following. And out of that, he set about writing his first novel, which was The Pickwick Papers. And The Pickwick Papers became a publishing phenomenon. They'd never seen so many books sold. And suddenly he was away, and he started work straight away on Oliver Twist, and also started work on Nicholas Nickleby. So by the time he came back here in 1849, he was a global superstar with a massive following. And he wanted to find a place. He had eight children by that stage, including my great-grandfather, who was 6 months old. He wanted to find somewhere where he could have a great family holiday, but also where he could sit and write a new book, which he was struggling with. And that book was David Copperfield. And the reason he was struggling with writing David Copperfield is that the book is hugely autobiographical. And for the first time, he was addressing in public the things that happened to him as a child, working in a blacking factory, child labour. His parents were off in prison for debt. And he was bringing that to life through David Copperfield. And when he came looking for a home, he visited a number of places. And he saw a house called Winterbourne, owned by the Reverend James White in Bonchurch. And he thought, this is the spot. And he wrote a letter back to his wife in London, posted from Shanklin Post Office, saying, "It is quite the prettiest place I have ever seen, either at home or abroad," which is not a bad line for the tourist department to be using today. So he arrived here in July, and they stayed here for 3 months, and he was writing several chapters of Copperfield and mixing with the locals and playing rounders on the beach and taking great walks along the downs. Every morning he'd climb to the top of St. Boniface Down, which from Bonchurch is not for the faint-hearted. He'd have a sea swim down on the beach. He had a carpenter convert the waterfall that flowed out of the grounds of Winterbourne and tumbled over the cliffs. He had it converted into a perpetual shower bath. So there was a sort of vast changing hut contraption with an open roof where he could get inside and sit and have this cold shower. And he'd say to his family and friends, the inimitable will be invisible until 2 o'clock every afternoon. So in the morning he could sit and write. And he wrote some wonderful things about the island. He loved the walks, he loved the views, he loved the people. He came to Cowes because he came to see Queen Victoria and Prince Albert off in the Royal Yacht on their first state visit to Ireland. He stayed with a friend in Cowes called Chauncey Hare Townsend. And many of his friends were here on the island too, people like Alfred Lord Tennyson, who was godfather to one of his sons, also called Alfred. So there were great connections in lots of directions.
Wow, what an incredible story. It's incredible that you're sat here now, revealing all of that. I'm honoured to be sat in your company. I mean, it's just, my wife will be so jealous because, you know, we often watch adaptations of certain things, and because she's a big bookworm, she will quote stuff and so yeah. on. And, you know, I sort of sit there and first of all, it's a case of, it's frustrating because it's, I want to watch something else. But then when I get into it and watch it, as I mentioned off air, the Dickensian programme that came out a couple of years ago, a good few years ago now, was absolutely fantastic. I was enthralled by that. And I was sort of, not ashamed, but kind of grumpy that I've missed that as a youngster growing up, but made up for it since.
Yes, it's interesting. I've visited lots of schools across the island as part of this anniversary year to give the sort of rags to riches story of Charles Dickens, and the youngsters really connect with it because Dickens was exactly the same age as them when his life took a turn for the worst. But out of that, by picking up a pen and writing, he changed his fortune, but he also changed society for the better. And when I talk about A Christmas Carol and we talk about the various versions made of it, when I mention the Muppets Christmas Carol, every hand in the classroom goes up, and lots of kids say, we watch that every Christmas with our grandparents, and we love it, which is wonderful that it still resonates and connects today.
What's your favourite adaptation?
Oh, there's lots. I think, when was it, 2020, I think, Armando Iannucci produced a new version of David Copperfield, which is wonderful. The cast is incredible. Dev Patel plays David Copperfield. There's Tilda Swinton. There's Hugh Laurie.
Yeah, we saw that.
It's an amazing version. There's another very good one called The Man Who Invented Christmas, which explores the sort of creative frenzy of Dickens writing this extraordinary little book, which he wrote in just a matter of weeks. There's another really good one called The Invisible Woman that talks about Dickens, played by Ralph Fiennes, who talks about Dickens and the relationship he had towards the end of his life with a young actress called Ellen Ternan. And they all give interesting aspects of Dickens, this extraordinary, complex, creative powerhouse of a character.
Wow. And one of the reasons why you come in is because you've just recorded 5 parts to the Scrooge story?
Yes, so we just read an abridged version of A Christmas Carol, which, as I'm sure everybody knows, it covers 5 staves. So we meet Scrooge, he gets visited by Marley, his old business partner, who tells him that 3 more ghosts are coming. And then we see where he gets taken with the Ghost of Christmas Past. We see the error of his ways as the Ghost of Christmas Present shows him how other people are managing to celebrate Christmas, even though many of them have very little. And then the third ghost, the spookiest, creepiest one, the Ghost of Christmas Past, shows him where his life will go if he doesn't do something about it. And then in the last chapter, Redemption, he wakes up, he realizes he needs to change, he becomes a good man, he uses his money to help people, and it's a story of redemption, which at Christmas time is just sort of wonderfully celebratory and a reminder to all of us that actually, you know, we might have a tough year and a grumpy old time, but even on one day, you know, let's be nice to each other and celebrate the fact we're all together.
How easy is it to watch other adaptations? Do you watch it and sort of get halfway through and think it's not like that at all? They've missed out bits. And
well, it's such it's such rich text. It's open to all sorts of interpretations. I have to say, there was a recent version of Great Expectations on the BBC, where they went off down some curious avenues, and I just thought, why do that? It doesn't need it. You know, the story is rich enough as it is. So why need it? There's another little great story, The Isle of Wight and Great Expectations. When the Dickens family were in Bonchurch, there was a family called the Dick family, also living in Bonchurch, quite a well-to-do family. And they had some children, one of which was Charles Dick and one of which was Margaret Dick. And in David Copperfield, there is a curious character called Mr. Dick. And in Dickens's notes, that character was going to be called Mr. Roberts, but he comes here on his holiday, meets local families, suddenly Mr. Roberts changes to Mr. Dick. 11 years later, Charles Dick's sister, Margaret, is due to be married. She's jilted in the church on the day of her wedding. She rushes home in her bridal outfit, locks herself away, and becomes a well-known local recluse. Dickens's daughters are on the island at the time with their friends the Whites, and word of that must have got back to their father. 2 months later, Charles Dickens starts writing Great Expectations, in which Miss Havisham is jilted at the altar and runs home and becomes a recluse in her wedding dress. So there's some lovely island stories that connects with Dickens' characters, both from that summer of 1849 and 11 years later.
Oh, wow. And what's lovely is you're keeping that alive.
Well, when I moved here, I wasn't fully aware of the story about Dickens and the island. And a lovely friend called Alan Cartwright, who lives in Bonchurch, he had done a lot of research and had put together a very good website. And he brought lots of people who'd helped create that website together for a summer garden party. And I was invited along. And it suddenly occurred to me, my background is marketing, and it suddenly occurred, marketing brain clicked over and thought, well, 2024 is the 175th anniversary. We should do something. So I spoke to Bob Seeley, MP then, and Will Miles at Visit Isle of Wight, and they were very encouraging and introduced me to a variety of people. And over the course of this year, we've had lots of things. We had an exhibition at Dimbola of colourised photographs of Charles Dickens that opened on his birthday. We had the Isle of Wight Story Festival, where youngsters wrote 500-word short stories, which are about to be published in a book by Medina Publishing. We had my brother, who's a professional actor. He performed two Dickens short stories at Cowes Fringe. We had a visit by the Dickens Pickwick Club in May. We had a visit from the Dickens Fellowship, who had their global conference in Portsmouth and spent the day on the island. Another cousin is a writer, Lucinda Dickens Hawksley. She gave a talk at the Literary Festival. I visited lots of schools over the course of the year. We've done this recording to sort of wrap up the year. And then next year, thanks to the Ramblers Association, we're going to launch a new walk on the island called the Charles Dickens Trail, which will be a 6.5 mile walk that starts in Shanklin, heads up the Downs, goes down into Ventnor and comes back up through Bonchurch. So that's something to look out for next year.
Are you going to walk with them and tell stories on the way?
Well, so we've put together a great brochure, thanks to the support of Visit Isle of Wight and Vectis buses. Within the brochure, we've got a series of QR codes where you can click on and it'll come up with an audio file where there's a letter that Dickens wrote or an observation that he made. And all of those recordings are made by members of the Dickens family. I think there are 7 in total.
Wow. That's incredible, and that's happening next year.
Yes.
So, I mean, you've been like proper busy this year, and looks like you're going to be busy next year as well.
Thank goodness I'm retired.
Yeah. What's your favourite story?
Again, you know, David Copperfield is great because it's so autobiographical. As you read it, you can learn an awful lot about Dickens, and as he often did, he'd base characters on people he met, people he knew. So, Mr. Micawber, them hopeless with money, feckless Mr. Micawber, is absolutely 100% based on Charles Dickens's father, who was sent to debtor's prison for bad debt when he was a boy. So there's lots of sort of characters you can discover more about by reading Copperfield. I think Pickwick Papers is terrific because it's just rip-roaring funny. You know, that's before he'd been... Pickwick Papers, as I say, became a publishing phenomenon. And it made people realise that this new young author, Charles Dickens, was exciting and worth following. Having got a fan base, he then wrote his first serious novel, which was Oliver Twist, which absolutely highlighted the divide across Victorian society. Queen Victoria read everything that Charles Dickens wrote. She first read him when she was in her teens. And if you read her diaries, which you can see online, she sounds like a Harry Styles fan. She's sort of giddy with excitement about this exciting new young author. And when Oliver Twist came out, her Prime Minister, Lord Melbourne, said, "You shouldn't read this book. It's too shocking." And again, in her diary, she said, "Well, I ignored him and I read it and I found it fascinating." Here is this unknown writer, this commoner, showing the Queen and her parliament and her ministers what was happening in society. And it made them sit up and open their eyes and realise that change had to happen. So he was such a hero of the people for making people sit up and realising that things were poor and starting to change things. So he was an extraordinary social reformer, while writing in such a way that, you know, entertained and made people laugh and made people think and made people cry. And what was clever in those days, he didn't write a full book. He wrote his stories in installments. So it'd be two or three chapters that were published in a magazine. Of course, no television or radio. So this was great entertainment. We'll all meet in the pub or the coffee shop, and the person that could read would read the stories out loud. And because they're so wonderfully written, he'd give voices to the different characters. And it would always end on a cliffhanger, just like EastEnders or Coronation Street does. And you had to buy the next issue next month to see what happened next. So it was a very clever way of engaging with the masses. To buy a magazine was cheap. And then when the story was done, then it was published as a full book. So he was often finishing, you know, the last chapters of Oliver Twist while he was starting the first chapters of Nicholas Nickleby. So to have all those characters in his head and the different storylines was extraordinary. I mean, he really was this phenomenon, this powerhouse, all driven by what happened to him when he was a 10-year-old child, where he was cast adrift. And that was the thing that lit the touch paper and made him so passionate about changing the lives of his fellow people. And so often in his books, it's the children. You know, it's Oliver Twist, it's Joe the Crossing Sweeper, it's Tiny Tim. It's the children who he uses, because that's exactly what had happened to him.
It's amazing that all those years ago, he had Queen Victoria reading his books. So lots of people, it would have been high profile back then, or as high as it could have been back then. But here we are, you know, all these years later, it's still high profile because, you know, all these people are still making programmes and dramas and so on. And they'll probably be a dozen or so dramas, at least some new adaptations of a new, you know, of Dickens books, novels, this Christmas.
No, for sure.
And it's wonderful to see. But you think, well, it must have been brilliant because it stood the test of time, isn't it?
Exactly, and that's the point, really. That, you know, you could read the stories now, and nothing, depressingly, nothing's really changed. You know, we have people relying on food banks and people are homeless and people are struggling to keep warm this winter. You know, if he was alive today, he'd come back. He would, my goodness, you know, let me sharpen my quill, because there's so much I can talk about. Politicians' expenses and, you know, rich business owners taking the mickey. It's all still there.
Well, that's so where you come in.
We recognise them all.
That's where you come in. Maybe you should write one.
Poor. That's a big ask. It's funny, people often say, "Oh, you're a member of the Dickens family, how interesting. Do you all write?" And that always makes me laugh, because I often wonder if members of the descendants of Jack the Ripper are often asked, "How do you all still murder?" But it's interesting, because there is what I call there have been some writers. My cousin, Lucinda Dickens Hawksley, is a prolific biographer, a great aunt, Monica Dickens, was hugely successful in the 50s and 60s. I did write a book, because I sailed around the world in the Clipper Round the World Yacht Race in 2000, so I wrote a book about my experiences. Sadly, didn't sell nearly as many as my great-great-grandfathers. But across the family, it's what I call a creative gene. I mean, my son's a drummer, my daughter worked in fashion, there are sculptors. So I say my brother's an actor, there are a couple of other cousins that act. So that we're all in this sort of communication world through different mediums, which I think is interesting. And communication, good communication, is about taking people on a journey and moving emotions and leaving them in a place with a different set of views that they had before they started. And I think that's interesting.
Do you know, I could talk to you all day. I think it's fascinating that, you know, there's this wonderful, wonderful story that people like yourselves are keeping alive. And it's actually working with young people as well that I think is a vital part of it now. And passing on these stories and passing on these the meanings behind the stories and so on is gonna play a part in a better world for young people, isn't it?
Well, I hope so. I sit on a literacy committee on the island with chaired by Dawn Haig Thomas, our last High Sheriff. And we're all hugely concerned about the literacy levels on the island, which are amongst the worst in the country. Mm. And there is something sort of very wonderful about Dickens, who championed the young and through words and storytelling, that he could be a conduit to do the same with the current generation. And when I go into schools and I talk to year fives and year sixes, they really get the story. And I say to them, look, who in this classroom has a pen or a pencil? And all the hands go up. And I say, who in this classroom can find a piece of paper? And all the hands go up. And I'm like, well, there you are. All you got to do is do what Charles Dickens did. Pick up his pen and write about something that you're passionate about.
Yeah. That's it. That is it.
Yep.
Hey, look, we've run out of time, but thank you so much
really
for coming
enjoyed it.
In. I'm really, really looking forward to hearing the whole thing on... We haven't sorted out a time yet, but I think it's got to be a Christmas Day, isn't it?
Got to be on Christmas Day.
There's five parts, and it's obviously an incredible story.
And it's an abridged version, so it runs for, what, 20 minutes, something like that? So
yeah.
Not too onerous on your time. Listen to it before Strictly comes on.
Yeah. Fabulous. Ian, thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate it. Will you come back again in 2025?
I'd love to.
Brilliant.
Love to.
You can be like the ghost of Vectis Past. Yeah. Can you?
I could. I'll dress up. It's radio.
I've heard about you dressing up as well. It's in a good way, in a Dickens way.
Okay.
Yeah, that's true, isn't it?
Occasionally.
Yeah.
Yes, occasionally.
I bet that's hot, isn't it?
It is. Your top hat and thick old tailcoats. Yeah.
Thank you so much again.
I really appreciate it.
We've got some Michael Jackson and Mick Jagger on the way. It's 13 minutes to one.